Oh.
Ah.
Yeah.
What's up? What's your say the thing?
We were told we should do a podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Say it again.
We were told we should do a podcast about D&D.
Oh, really?
Interesting.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
Podcast, motherfucker, podcast, yeah. Podcast, motherfucker, yeah.
Podcast!
Now, was that really weird for you, Rob, because you couldn't hear the
music?
Yeah,
I couldn't hear the music. I was just playing
crazy?
The music in my head, knowing the podcast.
We got Rob in studio.
Oh, Rob!
And this is actually our first podcast where we've got four of us trying to fit on the table.
So you guys had Ellie and Ben in the previous episodes.
Because you were absent.
But I was absent on holiday, so they just replaced me.
Yeah, but now...
And the reason I can't hear the music is because they don't have the budget for a fourth set of headphones.
The robbers stole...
So if you guys want their fourth guest to ever be able to hear the music, you need to donate to Patreon. Content creator. This is how I pay my mortgage. I gotta constantly be pimping myself out.
Hustle, baby. So we were told that we should talk about Viva la Dirt League, D&D.
Now, I've got a straight off the bat, D&D. What does it stand for? I've been wondering.
Dildos and dicks.
Yeah,
I thought it was Dungeons and Dragons.
No, it's just, that's why our sessions are so sexual.
Yeah, I knew it. As soon as there were all these dildos and dicks everywhere.
Have we been playing this wrong this whole time?
Yeah.
Going into dungeons and fighting dragons.
Fighting dragons, yeah. It's our little twist on dildos and dicks.
Yeah.
Get some dragons in there.
No, it stands for Dungeons and Dragons.
All right, good to know. Thanks, guys.
Although...
What's Rob got to do with any of this?
I don't know. What do you got to do with it?
You just asked me to come in.
I think Rob, I think Dungeons and Dragons a little bit.
Yeah,
you're a fan, right?
I am a pretty big fan.
Yeah, thank God.
I do it for a living full time professionally, which is odd to say that's something you can do for a living these days.
That is nuts. Did you ever think that was possible?
There's like 8.5 billion people in the world. So if you find a little niche that's like 0.0% of the world is interested in it, then, you know, you still found tens of thousands of people around the world who are like,
Are we actually up to 8.5 billion? Is that where we're at? Holy shit.
We're close. Somewhere.
We've kind of peaced out now, haven't we? We've kind of reached like...
Yeah, apparently the crime is going to go down.
It's that as a whole, no.
Oh.
There are a few countries where population growth is declining. It's less than replacement.
8.5 billion.
It's around there.
So D&D.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Just blew up.
Yeah. You guys talk about this because that's a serious issue.
Maybe another podcast. You guys stared very close to my second question, actually, but I'm going to do it now anyway. So... your kind of life plan prior to VLDLD, the D&D, our D&D channel, is what was your life plan prior to that?
I was an actor, and I was like, I'm going to be an Oscar-winning Hollywood star one day. That was my life plan.
Just, I don't know if we've fully identified. We've got Robert Hartley.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
In studio.
Let's to be super clear
we've got
about
Robert
that.
Hartley in studio, who is our dungeon master for... our D&D series.
Thank you. We probably hadn't fully identified
Welcome,
that.
Rob.
And if you haven't seen the Dungeons & Dragons channel or the D&D series, you might have seen me on D&D Logic, or you've seen me as a couple of times in like the board skits, a couple of the Epic NPC Man skits.
Yeah. You've been around.
I have. Around. We've been working together 5.5 years now.
It was 5.5 years. Holy shit.
It's been 5.5 years since Adam first made contact.
We did some date work the other day.
Coming up on 6.
Coming up on 6 years.
Coming up on 6 years.
In
June, I think it is. It'll be 6 years.
I remember the first thing we did was we did a D&D test session at Adam's house, right?
Yeah.
So and we did record it. Tom was there. I remember recording it.
Yeah, we recorded it.
It's on Patreon.
Yeah.
We did record it. With the plan of releasing it on the YouTube channel. But I think we were just, I mean, not that we're much better now, but we were so new to D&D then. It just kind of, our novice energy just didn't make for the best content. It was okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were also at a stage of like pivotal growth. Like when I started working with you guys, you were on less than 100,000. YouTube. And I remember the date that you hit 100,000 and you were all celebrating and stuff. And I was like, hey, well done. It was around about that same time. Mm-hmm. And when you came to like looking at the edit for that one shot, you were like, it's not like we're at a point where we're starting to really focus on like the quality of the stuff.
I remember that conversation.
Cultivating, what's the right word? being curating, yeah, curating what is on your channel and, yeah, being like really striving for better.
And we were
stuff.
Committing to doing more of it, yeah, and we kind of just went, that, okay, yeah, that was
first,
our test.
Yeah, like, the first thing you said was like, we've decided we're going to put it out to patrons to sort of gauge interest of the super fans, how much do they really like it, and if, yeah, we can get funding for it, maybe we can do it again with better budget, yeah, and better production, yeah, production quality and stuff.
I'm gonna rewind half a second. Do you guys remember why we decided to get into Dungeons and Dragons?
I remember you were a big driving force of it, and yeah, I was just like,
this is not a loaded question. I genuinely don't remember.
I feel like it was just something that
I know what precipitated meeting Rob, but I don't, yeah, remember prior to that.
I think it would have been something along the like watch. I don't know, but off the top of my head, would have been watching a bit of Critical Role. Not that I was watching it, but that would have been in the ether.
In the ether, yeah.
And the concept of the, I think one of the first instigators for it was, we could do it and do the green screen reenacting, yes, of it.
Yeah.
That thought process was what made us go, should we
could do it
go?
Better. Yeah.
But I don't know what the initial instigation of it was.
But yeah, so the instigation from then was Mike Glasswell, who some fans will know as Spidey and Zed, said, I know a guy that is a professional dungeon master. You guys should meet him. And yeah, yeah, right. And that was 28 July 2018.
2018, yeah. He said to me it was because he watched some like board game review channels and things, and one of them, Shut Up and Sit Down, was doing like a three-part one-shot of D&D. And he thought about you guys and your content you were making, because he's worked with you guys on the animated things and stuff before. And he goes, with the epic NPC man world set in like a World of Warcraft-esque high fantasy thing, it would be a smart tie-in. Like it wouldn't feel out of the blue for your fans to see those same epic NPC man characters as D&D characters. So he was like, well, this, and then I also know this guy who does good D&D. Let's introduce them.
So yeah, at that point, I mean, you have been into D&D for a long time now, but it was, in the grand scheme of things, relatively new to you as well.
Yeah. I've been playing D&D about coming up on 8 or 9 years, I think, yeah, it was. So I was only 2 or 3 years into playing.
Was it immediate when you started playing D&D? It was just like a drug, or
like heroin in my veins. The first session that I played,
first session.
I was like,
wow,
this is me for the rest of my life.
Really?
Like, yeah, I went home.
Was it just a particular
DM? And,
like, or was
and
it just
bought
the
PHB, the Monsters Handbook, and the DMG after the first session, and
wow,
was like, I need to read these.
When was it? Because you were, was it at drama school, or was it before that?
It was, so I got into D&D through hip hop, as we all do.
That makes sense. Let's not elaborate on that. Let's just like accept that as a, okay.
Because everyone does,
yeah, obviously.
Rob.
Yeah, obviously. I was an out-of-work actor, as those are synonymous. Actor usually means out-of-work.
Yeah.
And there's a guy that I'd met on set that was a hip-hop artist, and he was like, he was running this hip-hop for actors kind of program, something for actors to do between jobs. And it was a lot of fun. And I was like,
dance the pain away.
Yeah, dance the pain away, exactly. dance away. You didn't get an audition? Well, let's go
dance the pain away.
So I went to this hip-hop class for actors, and we did like a shared food situation at the end of each session, and one of the guys there was sort of, after a few dance lessons, he was like, he got brave enough to come out of the closet as a dungeon master, kind of thing. He was like, oh yeah, I do Dungeons and Dragons, kind of like really shy and all that. And then I went away and found Dungeons and Dragons through some other means, through my interest in board games and stuff, and found Will Wheaton's tabletop series and saw them playing something similar, Dragon Age RPG. And I was like, I think Dungeons and Dragons is something like this. I think I'd probably have fun with that. So I contacted this guy that I knew and said, you said you do D&D. Maybe we can run a game. And they ran a game for me. And I was like, right, this is me.
This is me for life now.
I found it.
I just had a... I remembered, because you said Will Wheaton, how we decided that we wanted to get into Dungeons and Dragons. It was Dan Harmon's Harmon Quest.
Oh, yes.
You and I were watching Harmon Quest one day, and we're like, we need to fucking do this.
Yeah, right.
That's how it was.
Yeah, I remember being a big fan of Harmon Quest.
And and then it was like the stars aligned that a few days later, Rob was like, Mike was like, oh, I know this guy that does.
Yeah.
It's amazing how much the stars aligned for this, because you were, after that first one that ended up on Patreon, you were like, if we can get sponsorship or budget for it, we'll do it again. And so I started listing a bunch of like dice companies and things that I knew. I was like, maybe you can reach out to these people. And then Wizards of the Coast reached out to you and said,
that's right.
And said, hey, do you want to do some sponsored Baldur's Gate?
Yeah, they wouldn't
just
have
at the same time that we were starting to look for sponsorship.
Oh, that's stars aligned. Yeah.
I completely forgot about that. So did Wizards of the Coast sponsor the first?
The very first one.
Descent into Avernus. Yeah, the one that's on the main channel. Oh,
yeah, of course they did.
Is that, like, did they reach out just because you had good numbers and they were just
Literally, I don't even think it came through our agents at the time. I think that came
through. I don't know if we had agents at this point.
I don't know if we did. I think it came direct to us. Yeah. So they would have literally just seen our YouTube channel and just gone, dim, go, reach out.
They do Epic NPC, man.
Looking back on it now is a little odd.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah, it is. Because at the time, you're like, yeah, we are massive. But then you look back and you're like, oh, we were not big at that point.
No. Yeah. That's really
was
odd.
Was it on the coast in Australia or was it global?
No, yeah. So to be fair, at how not odd it was, yeah, it was the Australasian branch that reached out to us.
And here's how it went. They went, we're doing Descent into Avernus as a new module coming out. Will you do sponsored content for it? And we said yes. And then I said, how much of it do you want to do? And they're like, eight half-hour episodes. And I'm like, cool. So which chapter of the book? And they were all of it. And I was like, it's a level 1 to 13 campaign that would take a person most of a year meeting weekly for three to four hours.
1 to 13 4-hour campaign now has taken us 4 years.
Yeah.
We did it in
4 hours.
Amazing.
Yeah. I was like, okay. So understandably, a lot of the comments on that were like, this is rushed. He's railroading them. He's not giving them choices. I'm like, yeah, because I've got to get through an entire campaign in 4 hours.
When you look back on that one now, are you like...
Do we level up? Like,
yeah, I started you at level 4. I was like, do this, and now you're going to hell. I'll level you up to level 6. And then I just jumped over 5. I was like, four to six, and then that's it.
Don't worry about all your details. Let's move on.
Yeah.
I'll take control of your minis for you.
I do remember a fair amount of that in that game session where I was just like, I suggest you use the spell. Great. You've done it. You've succeeded. You killed them.
Greg would probably move here. I'll just move them there for you.
So that was a lot of fun, but it didn't mean that when we started our main campaign, I was like, hey, we can have a little more time for a little more time for Sandbox.
What one thing I remember, again, rewinding a little bit, is that first session that we did that went on Patreon. This may be faulty memory or something, but I don't remember it being particularly D&D, like official D&D.
No, it was entirely homebrew. It was. If you looked at it, you'd go, that's a tabletop role-playing game, but you wouldn't necessarily go, that's D&D.
Right.
Because you... Like
we didn't know.
You didn't know what to play. It was going to be a one shot. I wanted to sort of ease you into the idea of tabletop role playing games because none of you had really done it before. You had a little bit, right?
I'd be a tiny bit, but
and also on top of that, your characters in the Epic NPC manual don't exactly lend themselves to direct translations to D&D classes, other than maybe Baradun as a sorcerer, and so. Bodger, I was like, as a blacksmith, I'll give you some fightery abilities, some barbarian-ish type abilities. And Greg, I was just like, there's no class, because this was even before Artifice.
Yeah.
And so I was like, there's no class that suits Greg, a garlic farmer.
Yeah,
and so I just made up like a new thing. And you had a feature called Forgettable Face, where you can blend into a crowd real easy, and you had advantages on stealth checks.
I feel like I never used
that. I also
gave
you a feature that was like, at any point, you potentially have infinite items. Like, you can just tell me, oh, I have a crossbow.
Yeah.
Because you needed a crossbow. And so I was like, okay, roll a dice. And if you look in your shop inventory, and it might be something that an adventurer has offloaded to you.
That makes a lot of sense.
And if you need a rope at any time, you go, oh, I've got a rope. And then
so
you roll for it and see if you've got a rope.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the feature. I made you like a shopkeeping feature.
Yeah, that's dope.
So we released that Descent into Avernus on the main channel. Mm. And we were really trying to have a point of difference, and not only were we, which you said before, trying the like green screen cutaway, like acting out moments, what we were actually doing, which I don't even know if we do it these days, it was fucking hard, is we were acting out, we shot it on we shot all the green screens on one of those little tube cameras, remember?
That's right.
Or tube lenses,
I remember that taking a long time.
Because we wanted it to look like macro shots of us as if we were the minis on the table.
Yeah.
So all the green screen backgrounds were shot all the backgrounds of the green screen were shot on the tube macro camera on the table, which was a fucking nightmare. And then we did the green screens ourselves.
Yeah,
later.
we had backgrounds of, and it was just like for 3 minutes, just watch you guys pick up some dice, roll it and stuff, just like pick up a pen and make notes, that it looked like you guys were taking over your little miniatures.
Yeah. So was that the goal back then, was to make it look like we have been miniaturized onto the
so
board.
We didn't have forest backgrounds or hell backgrounds or city backgrounds. The background was, you know, our torso because it was like as if we were down there.
Yeah, that's right.
Which was very ambitious.
It's good in concept.
I like it in concept.
It sadly, the concept didn't fully work, in my opinion. There are a lot of issues with that, with around editing and green screen and the time to release episodes and other bits and pieces. Yeah.
Shooting the entire game in the same green screen room as well left me, because I was standing way too close to the green screen for it. I was set up so that I've just got this green glow at the table the whole time.
Yeah. It was a very small green screen that we shot on as well.
We've learned a lot and come a long way with everything, but the filming locations as well. Yeah.
Because having to then... Like, green screen takes a wee while. Like, people think it's just magic. You click a button and the green goes away and the background you want goes in. It takes a bit more refinement than that. And to shoot...
It's getting closer and closer to that. You can open up your own camera phone now and put a green screen stuff. And it's getting better and better. But yeah, it does take a lot of refinement.
Looking at it now, it looks okay.
I forgot it was all green screen behind us as well. So it's not just the green
screen. That's what I mean. We shot the game on green screen.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of work went into that, far more than it really should have. By the way, that that background of what we're meant to be playing in is Skelliger Hall in Witcher 3. I literally went into game, went into photo mode so you can't see Geralt, and just sat. And he had to get the camera down low. He had to be meditating, and literally just went screen record and just walked away for like 2 hours or something to get like a really nice background that would just last for ages. And then that's what we used as the background.
Did it need to be? Could it just been a photo, or do you think you know?
Well, no, because of the movement of torches and the sun. As if you watch across episodes, the sun moves the entire time.
We just did a shot reverse shot in the green screen. There was a shot where Rowan and myself are looking towards a portal, and then we cut the camera behind us. And it's our shot over our shoulders of the portal.
I'm proud of that series still. Like, even though, you know, everything we're saying, it took a lot of work, and the green screen wasn't the greatest and stuff, and like the story itself's very heavily railroaded. But I'm still proud of how much we achieved in nine episodes.
Mm. When the table's fucking tight. Look how cramped together we are as well. Jesus Christ.
When we kind of established this thing of we do the board game and then we film the best bits in green screen, had we right from day one established that Rob will play every other character, or was that something that kind of evolved?
I think because the gag had always been that the DM is every character. I think we'd always just been like Rob.
I feel like that was from the beginning.
I'm just gonna blow some smoke up your ass now. Because I want to talk about Rob for a second and why he's such an amazing DM. So he comes from an acting background.
Shucks.
Toy Fakati graduate.
Which you're also
that's
Toy
Fakati. I mean, that's okay.
I mean that.
Toy Fakati,
I almost got you there.
For context, that's the most prestigious acting school in New Zealand.
And Rowan also went.
And Rowan also went.
Toy Fakati.
Yeah.
Got a degree in mathematics.
I mean, but that's like all of
applied
us at the table, though.
Yeah,
like
you've all got all of us. A degree in applied mathematics.
Obviously, Ben has a degree in math as well, which is amazing.
and has a knack for just D&D and the passion, like the immediate drug that it was for you. And so having Rob to do that and then to play all the parts.
The acting part to do that
when we're doing the green screen stuff. It's like you can't find that anywhere.
The people in my Discord and my community in general basically say, with a degree in acting and a degree in maths, I've basically got a degree in D&D.
Yeah. You basically got a degree in...
I got a degree in storytelling and numbers.
And that's how many of you are there in the world?
I think it's fair to say Rob is the most qualified person on earth for this role.
Making D&D content where we do green screen cutaways and the acting and all of it.
I'd agree with that.
But also, I feel like
I'm irreplaceable.
You're irreplaceable. So don't fuck me.
Oh, damn it. How do I retract that?
Let's neg him. Let's start negging him.
He's all right.
I'll worry about it.
I think also the undiagnosed ADHD helps as well, because then I get the hyper-focus on one particular topic and I'm like, read the PHB cover to
what
cover.
What would you be doing if you weren't a Dungeon Master?
Probably maths. My D&D career took off just in the last semester of my maths degree. And
did you have your sights on something specific?
Not specific in maths. I was working with my professor Igor Kontorovich about maths in education, and I was working with him as like a research assistant and stuff. So I'd probably be doing education based maths.
What's 9 times 8?
It's at least 70 something.
See, it's hard. Like, 70, you can be 70, really good at maths, 72. But like
the you had the answer immediately, didn't
oh, yeah.
you?
Yeah. yeah.
I ought to be fair. Times. I also had the answer immediately because I'm a smart.
I saw better with that. The other thing is like, what's 3 times 7?
3 times 7 is 21.
There it is.
I won. I beat the mathematician.
Wow, you can really dance.
but then you go something harder for Robin. I can't think of a harder one right now. 12 times 8.
12 times 8 is 96.
I expected you to do that immediately. I expect you to be a human computer, like an actual human computer.
You give me so here's the thing. I will always get the right answer. I will not always be the first to get the answer. My mental maths isn't as good, but I will always get the answer. And also, that's just arithmetic that you're asking me about. You ask me anything about calculus, I'll get the answer.
I don't know how to ask a calculus question.
Rob, when we went to the casino that time, and then we did the roulette wheel, and I said, what number is it going to land on?
Yeah.
And you said a number. I didn't land on that number.
I tried explaining that I'm not
divination. Yeah, I didn't land on the number that he said.
But divination is one of the schools of magic,
Rob. Yeah, I know. I know.
Anyway, sorry.
I was able to calculate how much you lost that day.
Yes, yes. You're now down $300, Ron. And I'm like, interesting.
Interesting.
What if I double down on that? What happens?
I tried giving you a math lesson on all of the different ways that the casino can screw you.
Yeah. And how they have an advantage.
No answer is that fucking math.
That's bullshit.
So we released Descent to Avernus on the main channel, and to critical acclaim by all of our fans.
Critical
acclaim by the people that watch it and love it.
I feel like the fair thing to say is the majority of your fans were like, I don't like this. It's not your usual content. I'm used to 3-minute videos about video games.
Yeah, the first
and this is 30-minute video
videos I just checked had over 1 million views, and then it goes, and now it's like 300,000.
Yeah. Like, people were like, this isn't your usual content. I don't like it.
Yeah.
And then the niche part where it interacts with the D&D Venn diagram were like, oh my god,
was the reason, this is probably one of your questions, but was the reason that we stopped releasing the content on our main channel because we were like, we started getting worried that the D&D community was the hardcores, but it was a smaller percentage of our fan base.
That's 100%.
That was the main reason.
The people who loved it really loved it.
They really loved it.
Cold, are you?
And so yeah, eventually.
Oh. Oh, I've been turning it up.
Is that on?
Yeah. It's on 20 degrees. Put it down to 18 or something. I'm really fucking hot.
Yeah. Hey, have a go. Yeah, I'm not.
Is it?
It's on hot.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Adam's been hitting it.
Adam's been turning this into a sauna room.
What is it? 20 degrees. I was trying to do it while also doing a podcast. So.
What was I saying?
Yeah, I got it. I'm going to answer it. So, yeah, I mean, kind of the reason was is it got lower views than our main skits, and that does literally hurt the algorithm.
Yeah.
But the people that were so invested in it were, like, literally, like, drug
Don't
addicts.
Don't you ever take this away from us.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we've got this issue where we've got hardcore saying, don't you ever fucking stop doing this, and a lot of people saying, don't ever post this ever again. And we're like, oh, wow, we're really between a rock and a hard place.
Well, they're definitely not saying, don't ever post this again, but what they're saying is, we won't watch it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's going to hurt the algorithm.
And that'll hurt the algorithm.
And the views in the algorithm was just kind of going, like, it's not really for the channel.
Yeah. So we spawned a second channel. That was our first ever second channel for Viva La Dirt League.
Yeah. It was our first ever second channel.
First ever next channel.
We decided that we would do a model on Critical Role or something like that and do a long-running campaign.
Yeah.
There was a discussion point. There was a big discussion that we had prior to that, which was, what the fuck should we do for it? Like, do we do new characters? Because we had played Bodger, Baradun, and Greg in Descent to Avernus.
Yeah.
And Britt joined us with a new character, and we'd gone, what do we do? Do you guys remember which characters were thrown into the air for who the hell we should play? So there was a discussion, obviously, of completely new characters, which we kind of said no to.
I suggested that, and I was like, trust me, if the super fans will they'll take to them straight away, just like they did with Bob.
Like
they did when we ended up in, we'll get to the Isolation Games undoubtedly. People love those characters.
And the girls' characters.
People, and I was like, trust me, they'll love them. And you were like, I don't know. We can't trust that risk.
Yeah.
I think it was a pretty natural fit for me to do Bodger.
There was, because Ben was going to join, there was a big discussion about the two of you playing the Muggers.
Oh, yeah. But then we realized how kind of two-dimensional that would
be.
I mean, they would have eventually really developed these personalities.
For sure.
So it might have
There's an alternate timeline where those two are very different characters now.
I'm glad they're still pure. Like,
they would have been good for like a one shot. Not a campaign.
Because every encounter would be like, hey.
Yeah.
Why are we?
Let's go, Mogum.
And then we would have probably turned that into some sort of battle cry.
And just be every time that we interact with a potential enemy, we're to fight them because you try and mug them.
Hey, see that merchant over
which would actually probably be great.
You know what we should do?
Not even potential enemies. Just anybody, anyone.
Anyone. We'd enter a village and they would just be mugging.
And that would have been the first entire like table session. Then the second session, you'd have got bored of it and started to go away from it slightly. And then they'd have evolved over time. And then we would have seen a huge divide between like the epic NPC man skits
and the
D&D skits. And they would have been just, you'd playing completely
different. That'd be so different,
Yeah.
I mean... That's a point I've got later, but let's talk about it now, is that already our three characters, not wild diversions, primarily Greg.
He's a little bit different, isn't he?
Well, he's still who he is.
We had that same thing that I was saying earlier. There was a problem. Like when we started, the Artificer class had been introduced. So I was like, okay, we can do that. We can try.
Artificer class. Oh my God.
It's the one that uses items. And I was like, it makes the most sense that you've got shopkeeper with items and stuff.
Absolutely.
Out of the 13 classes that were available.
Yeah.
It was like, I can shoehorn him into this, maybe.
I always think about, you know, when you start a new game like Overwatch or League of Legends, and they have like all the characters have a star rating for how easy they are to play.
Mm.
So obviously the harder ones to play, if you're really good at them, can be OP as fuck.
Yeah.
And I just imagine Artificer being one of those 5-star ones where it could be OP as fuck, but it's hard to play.
Yeah. And it's the way that we used to film in particular. Even now, it would still be difficult.
Like every 7 years.
We'd do one gameplay every 7 years.
Literally every 3 or 4 months.
3 or 4 months. Yeah. And we'd do an 8-hour session. It was just like, it was exhausting. And I remember by the end of our film, like we could do it every like 3 months, I'd say. And
sometimes it was like 4 months.
Sometimes 4 months. But every time when we were dedicating an entire day to it before, like the days leading up to it, I'd be so anxious. Mm. And like sitting at the table, I would just be like, it's so exhausting. I don't think we can emphasize how tiring it is to do
an eight-hour game.
And just to like, it feels like
on your back.
Yeah, I know we're just sitting there, and it looks like we're just having fun and stuff. But it's just such a time. I mean, especially for
you,
like
the whole time. Like you're constantly aware that there's 3, 4, 5 cameras watching what we're doing, and everything about it, and you're going to be scrutinized, and
you're going to be
scrutinized in the comments as to, oh, you're not playing your characters right. You should be casting this spell. That's not how concentration works. Yeah. Hey, Adam.
Can we?
You should
talk about that.
I've got it later.
Yeah. Okay, I'll know.
Yeah. So it's exhausting. You're on your whole time. You're thinking,
and we're gonna make mistakes because the camera's on you recording all the time.
Unlike a lot of actual plays out there, we're not filming a session and then releasing the whole session. We're filming a session, cutting it up into half-hour chunks with green screen cutaways. So I have constantly got to be aware of, like, make sure that something interesting's happened in the last half hour.
Yeah,
because that's an entire episode otherwise.
Yeah.
And for us in our we are just such busy people running this company and having lives.
What else have you got?
Whatever we got. you
know, we're not fucking doing it. You had one job, Alan, to fucking play out of
to play D&D. But just months would go by where that wasn't on my mind, and then it would be days leading up to it. I'd probably chat with you for a little bit, a few days leading up to it, and
I'd be like, right, you're leveling up in this session. You need to choose two new spells, two new infusions. You need to remember what Poppy can do.
Yeah, and
Poppy's got upgraded.
Try and reintroduce myself to D&D, and then playing the game, remember where we're up to in the story, who the characters are, like
one thing,
and then how to play Artificer. And
one thing I think our fans don't realize is Rob is a professional DM. He plays D&D plays or thinks about D&D every single day.
Oh, most of waking hours. Yeah.
And
it's amazing.
You fans have seen every single time we have ever played D&D.
Yeah.
Every single time we've ever played has been for Viva La Dirt League. We don't play off camera.
But the way they do CS play is they see us play every week for half an hour. And it's like, well, they must be constantly playing.
They play every week.
It's also a shame because I've only ever known it to be a performance for camera.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
So I've never known what it's like to kind of just be a fun hobby by yourself, just chilling. Like, which a lot of people do it. Like, instead of their boys' gaming night, their boys' webcams.
It's something I constantly have to remind myself as well, especially because in my community, I get a lot of people coming and asking, like, DM tips and tricks. What are you, first time DMing on the weekend, have you got any tips for me and stuff? Mm. And I have to filter it through a filter of, I know D&D through content creation. Yeah. I make D&D for a living. I stream D&D on my channels. I this and that and the other. And for the vast majority of people playing D&D in the world, the only audience for their game is themselves.
Yeah.
It's a unique medium where you are the writers of the story and you are also the audience of the story and nobody else sees your games or hears about your games.
I find it so hard to imagine doing D&D just for yourself because all I've known is your
return on investment.
It's kind of return on it and like create. We go, what's going to be the most entertaining story to
for an audience?
And what's going to be the funniest choice to make here?
Yeah, like, that's a big part of it. There have been several moments, I can't remember them off the top of my head, where I've had to make a choice.
And then the story
keeps going and stuff. Yeah. I'm like, I should have done a different thing. That would have been so much funnier.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then dwelling on that. how have you stayed passionate about D&D? Like, as soon as anything becomes a job, like, it becomes a job, right? Like,
how does an alcoholic stay passionate about whiskey?
It's just a straight addiction at this point.
Yeah, right.
I've always been a storyteller. Like, when I was a kid, I was playing playing pretend far beyond the age that people normally just, like, get into sports instead. And I was still running around with a cape and a stick when my much younger friends were all like, hey, we're into girls now.
We're into girls now. No.
I'm into girls.
I'm a Superman.
Exactly. So I've always been a storyteller. I've always been imaginative. I got into acting for that reason.
It's just an extension of you, like D&D, right?
And D&D. I always thought acting, when I got into D&D the first time, I was like, oh, this is scratching the acting itch now that I'm not really acting anymore.
Yeah.
And then I realized the more I got into it, that it was the other way around. Acting was always scratching the D&D itch before I knew what D&D was. Now that I found D&D, I'm like, oh, this is what I was destined for.
Yeah. Amazing.
So here we are now 4 years deep into the main campaign. So we've been doing it for a long time now. What's been your favorite, I'm going to say game moment first. We're going to talk about green screen moment soon. What's been your favorite game moment? Rob, you can go first. What do you two think? I've got one.
High up on the list was Bodger jumping off an airship. That was a moment of, he has no idea how close he's just come to killing himself, just straight up.
Yeah.
Because he was expecting to just, you teleport back onto the ship. I had a whole system of like, no, you got to roll some things. He's got to see if he can roll to catch to you.
Yeah, I think Rowan.
And then you kept rolling terribly, and it came down to like the last roll where I'm like, this is the final roll. And if you don't roll well enough, or he doesn't roll well enough to catch you, he doesn't catch you. And what's funniest about that moment is that it was just after lunch. And at that lunch, you had specifically talked to me about plot armor, and you were like, I want you to remove all the plot armor. Because I was saying like, you guys are the main characters of the story. The story is kind of tied around Baradun's enemy, Laethil, and all this. We're building towards
really
that.
I can't
really kill you guys off, so like, I would probably resurrect you video game style if you died. Yeah. There'd be some penalties to dying, but I'll resurrect you. And you were like, no, I want actual stakes, like actual be able to kill me. And so then the first thing you did when we came back from lunch telling me you jumped off an airship. And I was
discussed something like you have a filler in character for a while.
Yeah.
And then eventually if you can make it to a temple or something, you could after like a long time, you'd be able to get them back.
Yeah. I've got some mechanics in mind, which won't actually be that important now that we've got a high enough level cleric who can cast Raise Dead. He can... With a high enough diamond, he can just bring you back. Until that moment when you had access to Raise Dead, my mechanics were basically you had to reset yourself. You had to go back to where you had a last previous save, which is like your last long rest. Yeah. And that's where you last saved the game, and then you can resurrect them by spending some spell slots and money.
That is a funny... You've mentioned this a few times, and you keep referring to it in the D&D thing. You keep referring to save. Like, in your mind, we're still in a slightly game world. I'm not sure.
It's one of those things where it's like, just don't look at it too hard.
Yeah.
Because when we first started, we kind of did chat about what can be some mechanics that lean more into video games. And in the last couple of years, we've just fully leant away from that. Yeah. We're just playing in a fantasy world.
Yeah. People, to the point where people have asked me, oh, the ladies campaign, like, are these characters NPCs? Are they playable characters? And until I was asked that in my Twitch stream, I was like, genuinely hadn't even crossed my mind. I'd forgotten that we were doing that.
Yeah.
And so the ladies campaign, 100% not a video game.
So
your campaign, even though it's in the same world, I still think of as a video game.
Yeah, I think there's a world where we could, like, create some, like, in another maybe one shot or another, like, the next campaign. Lean into the. I love the idea of leaning into video game mechanics for another campaign. I think it's right to not be leaning into it for these ones.
I actually really love the world of Azerim as a fantasy world.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems sad to pollute it with having to go.
Maybe it's a video game.
I think we had this discussion, and my memory is that we kind of decided to lean away from video game because it takes away all the stakes. The moment,
you'd have to tie it into, like, if we were talking about, like, the server is shutting down or something, or there's something catastrophic happening to the game for there to be stakes or something
the,
like
the
that.
The way that I introduced stakes was in the Dark Souls kind of way of, like, you just lose a bunch of shit. Like, if you die, you have to spend a lot of money and spell slots to get back to where you are.
The way I rationalize it is every character that we meet beyond us is an NPC, and they're going about their life in the game.
You created this character who guarantees survival if I was to fall off the edge. Guarantees it. So it's like, why wouldn't I test that out?
Yeah.
Of course I'm going to test it. You
Rowan,
for it's the your fault, Rowan.
It is.
Rowan is the sort of guy in video games is always the one that just tests out, like, will this kill me? Will this kill me? Will this kill me? And he'll establish these foundational rules before carrying on
whenever
with the
game. I literally, the first cliff I come to, I just literally try to walk. Okay, you can't. Let me walk off cliffs. I had to test these things. I need to know what I'm dealing with here. Yeah. So I had to know.
Yeah, it makes sense. And from my perspective, I was like, I was just world building. I was coming up with an airship. I was thinking about, because there was in that episode, in that session prep, there was air pirates that were going to attack you. And it was under a section that I always have in my notes for a game that is, if we're behind on time, skip this part. And I always have those, and I don't think I've ever used them.
Because we're
always
never
behind on time.
We're always behind.
But I had, like, a series of air pirates that were going to attack the ship and stuff, and so I was like, oh, what if one of them gets thrown overboard? I need some sort of...
Well, you saved us from the pirates, bro.
I remember with that thing, I remember you weren't in a bit, very good mentally
that was the day.
Headspace, and I remember at the time thinking it was going to be a quick... jump off, get like it was a 1 minute little thing, and then I felt so bad. I was like, "Oh fuck!" Alan's
look back
not
over
a great
that footage.
At the moment,
I don't know what episode that is, but that was the toughest D&D day of my entire life. I had a big breakdown that day, which was just
episode 60, I think.
Yeah, right. So did you see? Like, I want to go back and have a look as well.
It was right before. It was right after lunch that we filmed that bit. And you were getting onto the airship right before lunch. We stopped as you were getting on the airship, essentially. You talked to me over lunch about that, and I was like, you can 100% bow out. It's fine. And you were, like, feeling really guilty. I was like, I can write anything in D&D.
Yeah.
I have omnipotent power in this world. I can have you teleported away
and
by some random
but at the time I was like, continuity and
I was like, I can have you teleported away. I also knew about Jack Hooper, one of the characters you guys have met in game. They won't have seen it yet, but like the master of artifacts and stuff at the Order of the Weave. He was already an NPC in my head, so I was like, oh, Master Padraic could code to you and be like, oh, you're an artificer. I've got a guy back at the Order of the Weave. It's also an artificer.
Come
you
with
should
me.
Talk to him.
Come
and I was gonna have him whisk you away on the ship or whatever. And I was I was planning on that at lunch, and I was like, don't worry about it.
Yeah,
and that was the plan going back into the second section of the day. I said I'll come up with an excuse to get you away for the rest of the session.
Yeah,
then you jumped off the ship and all the shenanigans occurred. You started having a real good time, like you were enjoying yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
And you turned to me at one point and just whispered, "Don't worry about it."
And
it was you jumping off the ship and there's shenanigans.
I think it was probably jumping off the ship that actually genuinely helped distract. I don't know.
Because what you were saying before, like your lead up to playing the games were always like filled with dread and anxiety.
Totally.
And then whenever you were playing the games, you were having fun with your friends, like enjoying it.
Yeah,
especially
in the first half of the day. The second half often tends to be
tired and
just exhausted and overworked and brain is just an overdrive.
That is like all of my favorite moments that I can think are not D&D moments. They're all just having fun, having a laugh moments. Like,
well, there has to be the Ben rolling the
I was
one
just
one
about
one.
To say,
Although that's a D&D moment, but
right.
Like, I mean moments like Ben pretended to be Sandra and you fucking him. and the necromancy not even once, like the obvious kind of writer's room feel we had there as we were coming up with that. All of those kind of moments where we're just like, I know it pauses you because we're fucking around, but that's the fun shit. Like
I definitely appreciate, especially now with like the tavern and we're doing half days, like sitting down at the table with mates to play a game. It's a really satisfying, fulfilling.
Like, it always irks me when the comments are like, another half hour and they didn't even do anything. They didn't even progress the story. They didn't even play. I'm like, they're playing D&D. Did you see how we were playing D&D for the last half hour? This is Dungeons and Dragons. Yeah. What are you expecting?
Exactly. I've got a few highlights that I want to throw out. There's one really recently that will come out soon. Us trying to get into the castle. Oh, yeah. That was like, we just fail at every possible turn.
It's the worst we've ever done.
It's the worst we've ever played. Fucking it's probably like episode 180 something.
Nah, it'll be like 200.
Nah, it'll be
190s.
Which was just, it was beautiful. It was just this cacophony of just awfulness.
And it coincides with me taking the gloves off a little bit. Like as we get closer and closer to endgame, which we are, we're approaching sort of last levels of the campaign.
Yeah.
And things are ramping up. I'm like, I do not want to be pulling punches in that last final fight and stuff. So I need to sort of start taking my hands off you and see if you can ride the bike on yourself.
Yeah.
Good on.
I'm also really proud of Greg's arc that he's kind of been on. I love that he's kind of going back to his old ways. Maybe I'm not so aware of it anymore, but that he just got so dark for a while there, and just to then have a decision and a character moment where he chose to become a cleric was just, I'm quite proud of that. And finally, there was one real niche thing that I don't know if you guys will be able to remember from the Descent into Avernus campaign we did. Right at the end, in the final battle against Zariel, is that right?
This is one of my favorite moments.
Where Zariel,
where pretends
to, like, I'm her old flatmate or something. We went to school together.
Like, so to give context for those who can't be asked going and watching it, you really should. It's amazing. But to give context, Zariel is an arch devil that was like an old angel that fell down to hell and is now like the ruler of one of the layers of hell. She's super powerful.
Yeah. Level 20 boss.
She does have a stat block, but she's like a challenge rating 26, which means like level 20 characters should have a hard time fighting a cat sort of thing. She's coming zooming in, and I'm like telling you. She's on her way. She's still like a quarter mile away, but you can see her flying towards you with like hellfire around her. She's going to get to you in X number of rounds.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait, I've got disguised self.
Well, so I couldn't think of anything
else. Which is like a first level spell. Like,
everybody else is knocked out or dead, or at least it's not going well.
It's not going well.
Yeah.
You're like drastically trying to open the portal to get you home.
Yeah.
And Rowan's like still another round away from like achieving it. Yeah. So you're like, we need to stall her.
Yeah.
So you guys disguise self on yourself as like one of her old flatmates or something. And then you're like, oh my God, Zariel, is that you?
And I think I rolled a 20.
And I was like, I will allow you to try this.
Yeah.
But her insight modifier was like a plus 18 or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, you need to beat her, whatever she rolls. And then I think I roll a nat 2 or a nat 1 or something. And I was like, oh my God. And I like lift the screen up to show you. I'm not bullshitting. I actually rolled like a nat 1 plus your 19 and you rolled a 20 or something. It was just the most amazing. It's so funny.
I remember that was just one of the beautiful moments, and everything clicked. Because obviously, you have these ideas, but then you have to roll properly for them to actually...
But then some of my favorite moments as well, like people, there has been a little bit of a cheating controversy recently, but I had been saying in that, why would I cheat on rolls? Because some of the funniest shit comes out of bad rolls.
Yeah. Out of failure. Yeah.
Like some of my favorite game moments, like literally what you're talking about, the getting into the castle in a few episodes,
definitive
is from failure.
Viva La Dirt League D&D.
It's so funny.
Setting up everything that you're going to do.
Yeah.
Especially if you get into the swing of like describing how everything goes. And we haven't rolled for it yet.
Yeah.
Which is where the D&D logic skit came from, of you stealing the orb of MacGuffin or whatever.
You're just telling yourself.
I did it. And I was like, no, you can't just describe what happens. You've got to roll to
some
see
shit.
If it happens.
Yeah.
I love that. There's a recent quote from D&D Logic is, you can't, what is it? It's your quote.
You can't just say,
you can't just say what you're going to go. You roll some shit.
Roll some shit.
Which people are like, that needs to be the quote for fucking D&D in general. One of my favorite, I just want to quickly say, my favorite game moments is robbing the mask shop. It's just so.
What was her name?
Pearl.
Yeah.
She robbing the old lady, especially when you think about in the bigger picture, how the stuff that you stole from her, you spent ages stealing from her and like traumatizing her and stuff. You haven't really used those masks to great effect.
One of my questions down here is, Rob, what the fuck is the Curious Mask?
Okay, so the Curious Mask,
Was your microphone working?
Elliot, we're thinking about a mic issue. I can't even hear him outside of the...
I heard it. That's nuts. I know.
I will tell you, it has stats. I know what it does. A lot of people are like, he's just making stuff up. But I know what it does, have come very close to working out what it does.
I thought whole thing was, it's just exactly what it says on the tin. It's if you wear it, makes you curious, and that's it.
Maybe.
What's Baradun working on? What's he working on, Rob?
Well, you're working on Baradun.
What are you working on, Baradun?
Well, he's like 40 or 50 into it now, right?
No, I think it's like 60.
60 into it. Yeah. So you'll find out eventually.
I'm looking forward to doing more.
Okay. I remember driving home genuinely being like, fucking Baradun.
Obviously, we're not going to get the answer from you sons of bitches, but how impactful is it? A tiny little thing, a little bit of extra this, or is it something meaningful?
What Baradun's working on?
Yeah.
It'll be majorly impactful.
Interesting.
God, what are you working on? What are you up to?
I've got some home games that have been running since I first started playing D&D, so like 8-9 years, and there are things in that I still haven't told them about that is like long con. I'm like fueled by people's theories about stuff. So yeah. So in my Discord, there's channels for this campaign and the latest campaign and other campaigns that I run. And I love to go in and I just scroll through what people are thinking and how they're hypothesizing. I'll sometimes screenshot if somebody actually gets it right, and I'll be like, they got it right on this date.
Yeah, right. And you've got a system in place that you can bring those up.
I'll eventually say like, hey, when it finally comes. Episode 112 of the main campaign is a huge exposition dump where we learn, spoilers if you haven't gotten this far, give you a second to mute. where we learn that Kelathak is Bob's patron and is like becoming one of the Dark Lords. And I was sitting on that for I was sitting on that for so long. And so eventually, when I did my behind the screen stream of that episode, it was like double the length of my usual streams because I was like, right, let's talk about everything that I've been sitting on for the last 3 years.
Very important question. Why, I wish Ben was here, why do you guys love Jeff so much?
I don't love Jeff.
Because
Jeff angers me.
Because of that.
But why you love him?
That's why I love him. Because of that reaction.
Yeah, no, I get it. Like that's I totally understand that.
I actually love Jeff, and I've been pretty open about that.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan.
I wish Ben was here to back me up.
Jeffrey.
I think it's the pain that I feel, Alan feeling, that makes me love it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right. Same. No, so it's my pain actually feels all three of you.
It makes me feel good.
Cool.
It's actually the same with the Uwu Dragon. It's like people hating that is what like people.
Do you know what
all the comments were? I never bring the Uwu Dragon back, and I'm like.
Oh God!
Do you know what it is? In my mind palace, I've got this. Oh yeah, this is epic. This moment is epic. And suddenly there's this Uwu Dragon like twerking his nipples, and like Jeff's like riding the Uwu Dragon. I'm like, you've ruined this.
This is out of place for Game of Thrones. This is Game of Thrones in my mind.
Game of Thrones wouldn't have an Uwu Dragon. Jeff be like, yeah.
Let's quickly go to other definitely canon things. Straya. Straya is definitely canon.
Straya
is definitely canon.
Canon in D&D.
What else is definitely canon?
Scotland
is Scotland.
I think Scotland's accepted. I think. Been accepted.
Clouds that you walk on that go.
Have you heard that one out yet?
That could be a mod in Hezron. Skycraft.
People have been requesting that I make Jeffrey a real boy on a wild search one day, and I was like, watch this space. we've talked about it. Also,
if he enters the world like Ace Ventura out of the rhino's ass in the sequel.
I want to also call this out just so that everybody knows that I've said it officially. I know what the doll inside of Bodger's doing. Stop telling me that I've forgotten about it. I do not forget things.
You're doing things.
I have notes.
Hold up.
The doll inside you.
Is it still doing stuff?
Yeah.
Is this a doll that he put up his button and
absorbed into me.
The one that was following
me.
Eventually absorbed inside me.
I thought we'd just walked far enough ahead of it that it was just behind us.
No, it's not in Bodger.
Wow. wow, it's in Bodger. Yeah.
He eventually got sick of it following, so he touched it to see what it happened.
Which you didn't expect to happen.
I didn't expect him to touch it that quickly. I expected him to do it like a session or two later.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, he touched it and it stuck to him, and then it started to immediately just absorb into him like an anglerfish.
Oh, wow.
And I know what it does. Stop reminding me. Okay. I don't forget things.
So
they are all
in
my notes.
Chat there.
It's not doing anything.
The amount of things in your head is absurd.
Very quickly, this is a question just for you, Alan and Rowan.
Yeah.
Which of Rob's female characters have you been the most confusingly sexually attracted to?
All of them. Anytime Rob comes out wearing breasts, I'm just like, oh, what is, whoa. Wow, what is this doing to me?
For me, I think it's Zybilner. It's long hair.
His ex-girlfriend. What's
Stephanie?
That? Stephanie. Oh, yeah. Stephanie, yeah. Stephanie.
For me, I'm so sorry, Rob, but it will always be Sandra.
Sandra.
Will always be my first love.
Yeah.
Sandra.
I'm actually attracted. Sharon Bobaron, Bodger's mother. Like enormous breasts that they gave you in that one, which was
The first like 20 female characters that I was playing in the green screens, they all had one bra for them all, and they were all like double G.
Yeah.
Every single one. And I was like, can you just give me just like B cups for one of the characters,
no,
maybe?
All women have massive boobs is the only way to portray it.
Our D&D sessions are, this might hurt you to hear, that to me, they're not D&D. They are interactive improv role play where we get to fuck around and have fun in the Epic NPC Man universe.
Yeah, right.
And we sometimes, not all the time, a lot of our fans obviously are addicted to the series, but sometimes get people like, you're not playing D&D right.
Yeah.
And you're doing this wrong or that wrong, or you're cheating here, or Rob's new rule around XYZ breaks the game. It's horrible.
Mm.
But that's not what we're playing for. We're playing to tell a story in an improv fashion.
Yeah, and we're a comedy channel and we're just trying to have fun and make people laugh.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I've got a flow chart in my mind of like, was that a successful game of D&D? And it starts with the question, did everybody have fun? Yes, no. And that's the only question.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
Let
me bring up my doc here. Yes.
Yes,
well,
they
that
had
was
fun.
A success.
Did everybody have fun? Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. Cool.
We had fun. Okay, we had a successful game.
Because that's all we're trying to do. We're not min-maxing out. In fact, I, as Baradun, actively am not min-maxing. Mm. When I level up or when I do something, I'm doing what's the most Baradun or what's either one of two things. What's the most Baradun thing to do or what's the funniest thing to do?
Yeah.
And sometimes the funniest thing is not necessarily in character, whatever, it doesn't really matter. Like when, bringing out Jeff, bringing out an Uwood dragon, rushing into battle and not telling you guys the plan.
Yeah.
That's the funniest thing and the most Baradun thing to do.
God, man, if we played
is the most bodger.
If we played everything just the most
straight,
practical,
it.
Most
What's the way to maximize
Bringing Jeff as a major illusion into battle is never the most efficient thing to do.
Yeah.
But it's
a ring that makes you shit.
That makes you shit is not the.
Although, I wonder if we can.
I mean, you have to try.
I want that to be a climactic, key. Oh,
yeah. It's like your Bodger's last. He's on one HP. He's like, like his last ditch effort.
Oh, no, I shit myself.
God damn it, Bodger.
And then he'll kill you on the next round.
Because when you get 6 levels of exhaustion, you die, right?
Yeah.
So he's at 5 levels of exhaustion. We're fighting Laethal. Final last thing. Die.
Shits himself to death.
Oh my god.
That's what our D&D is. It's not trying to min-max. And I wanted to get into, we're unfortunately out of time. I wanted to get into a bit more of a discussion about that there is comments that take us down sometimes.
We are real people.
Are not appreciated.
We do read the comments. So if you're like ragging on us for this and that and the other, then just remember people are reading those.
Yeah.
Just be kind.
Absolutely.
Picture that you're saying it to is in person, and if you wouldn't say it, then don't write it.
Before we wrap it out, Rob, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me all over the internet. Viva the Dirt League D&D for one thing. Robert Hartley GM, HARTLEY. Hart like the deer, not the organ. Mm. RobertHartleyGM.com, and from there, all of the links. I was lucky enough to get Robert Hartley GM on all of the platforms.
Holy
shit! I have the same thing same handle on everything, which is great.
Hell yeah! Well, to reiterate, Rob, you're the only person that could do what you do, and
thank
we
you.
Appreciate you. Thank you so much for being.
We should
part
talk about
of...
pay rise.
We talked about D&D. We talked about you and me.
Yeah.
Talked about doing D&D and we're doing it for free.
No.
we're not.
No.
Rolling the dice.
We're rolling the dice. Rolling the dice. Rolling the face. Rolling the case. Rolling the dice. Bice to my to pie to kite tie to tip tie ties. Yeah.
Nice. This is actually a pretty good one so far.
She make a digga 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 dig.
Woo!
That's one of the best ones, to be honest. That's not a bad rap.
Not bad.
It's gotten a lot better, Ron.
Thank you, Robert. Let's go play some D&D. Whee!
Bye.